Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
So, James, this is where we are. What do you think?
It's the same thing. Now, how long have we been doing this show, Jonas? We've been doing this show. You know when we started this show? Do you remember?
I think it was the year of the lockout.
It was 2012, and you had that studio space we could use downtown, and we had no idea what we were doing. So that's, you know, it's almost 9 years ago. And in that time, we have recorded many, many, many more podcasts like this than we have, you know, happy, positive podcasts. You know, I was saying to you, what's the biggest win that you've covered? Before the game, we were at the game last night. What's the biggest win you've ever covered in this job? You've covered this team. What was your first year? 07 or something like that?
Something like that.
You've covered this team like 15 years. Like, what's the biggest win you've, you know, it's just amazing. It's amazing that we haven't covered them win one big game. And, you know, probably the biggest win they had was maybe 2013 when they sent it to game seven. Like, no one expected them to get to game seven in that series, and they battled back and they won game five and six and sent it to seven.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one of those Washington games, or yeah, I mean, one of the Boston games.
That Washington series was a lot of fun given the no expectations and they were kids. And how, you know, that was only 4 years ago, Jonas. How things change, you know, pro sports, it marches along pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you really, as much as like sometimes it feels like hyperbole to say like every season it's championship or bust, but it is like it goes by, like you're saying, really fast. Like Matthews and Nylander have three more seasons left on their contract. Like, it's not, there's the runway isn't as long as you think sometimes. And man, I just did not see this coming. I even, like I told you yesterday, I thought that they would win and this would be part of like that story you talk about with a team where like they just need to get over that one hurdle and they make it really tough on themselves and then they get over it and then things are fine. And obviously things are not fine.
No, I mean, I started to have some doubts in game five, and then game six, I stopped believing. So, It's pretty amazing. You know, I think that Montreal adjusted some things and the Leafs did not. And I mean, we have so much to talk about. Do you have like a schedule laid out? I mean, there's lots of different things I'd like to hit on. You know what? I wouldn't call it a rant, but maybe I'll just say a couple of things at the beginning. You know, in hindsight, I think that we probably gave management too much leeway this season, I think, in our coverage. And you know, we weren't, I don't think, skeptical enough of the season that they had.
Don't speak for me. I do not feel that way about myself. What do you think weren't skeptical? I was skeptical of their trade deadline.
No, but I mean, even before that, you know.
I didn't think they should sign Wayne Simmons. Like, I was fine with Thornton. Brody was a hit. Like, what did they do that was so... The thing that I think is egregious is they relied too much on older players, which I believe I was critical of, or skeptical of is probably the right way to put it. But like, what do you want them to do when like their two best players do not have a good series? Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So what do you think, like, we weren't critical enough of?
They just needed a little bit more. They either needed their two best players to be a little bit better, or they needed more from the rest of the lineup, and they didn't get either thing. They're in their win now window, right? And you look at the way that they played, what were their chances of winning right now in this year?
I wouldn't have picked them against any of the top teams. Like, I think Tampa's a lot better. I think Colorado's a lot better. I think Vegas is a lot better.
So shouldn't we then be a little bit more critical of the process then? Like, isn't the goal for them to be able to beat those teams?
Yeah. I just don't, like, so what should they have done differently?
Tried to make their team as good as those teams?
But that's general. Like, you have to be specific. It's like saying the coach should be fired without saying, okay, well, who are you going to replace him with? So, like, what do you think? Like, they addressed their blue line. They got TJ Brody, who is maybe their best player in the series.
I just think we should raise the bar a little bit in terms of expectations
Well, that's why, like, you can start questioning whether it's going to be the right decision or whether they should keep their core intact. Like, that's something that they have done.
This is going to go back to, you remember those years when the team was mismanaged? And I mean, I just think there's going to be a lot more skepticism over every decision that they make.
Well, you wrote in your column after game seven that you don't think that they can run it back. Let me ask you to, like, elaborate on that.
I think that there's going to be,
what does that mean?
I think the roster is going to look significantly different. I think there's going to be different staff brought in. I could see different management staff. I don't mean Kyle Dubas. There's a lot that I think we could see change here. I'd be very surprised if the roster looks the same.
But the roster's not going to look the same regardless because they have a lot of UFAs.
Yeah, but I don't mean like a bunch of fourth line guys that made 800 grand. Like,
okay, so you're talking about what I wrote about, which is potentially trading one of their big players.
Well,
now maybe that's not the core four guys. Maybe that's Riley. Maybe that's...
They need decisions, Jonas. They need another goalie. They need a decision on Hyman. They need, in my opinion, they need a decision on Riley. Walking him to UFA in 2022 is not acceptable. It's not acceptable because you can trade him for an asset or you can decide he's part of the team and try and get him signed to a contract. You got to make a decision on him.
I'm not sure I agree with that, but okay.
You think you can walk him? Do you think this team's going to get better by walking their best defenseman to UFA and letting him leave for nothing in 2022? How are they, like, how's the roster get better if they do that?
Yeah, but so the choices you're giving me are, I should definitely sign him when I'm not sure I want to sign him, or I should trade him for some imaginary something that I don't know what it is. And how are they getting better? Like, are they getting a better defenseman for Morgan Riley? Like, is some team out there willing to take 1 year of Riley and maybe extend him and give you back a better defenseman?
Well, I mean, there's been lots of trades like that around the league. I mean, there've been lots of players traded with 1 year left on their deal and then they sign an extension to where they go and the team that traded the player gets an asset back for them. You know, that's
right. Like, one that comes to mind for me, I believe, what did Justin Falk get traded for?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
But what did St. Louis, or not St. Louis, what did Carolina get back?
I can't remember. Pacioretty got traded towards the end of his deal and signed a long extension with Las Vegas.
I'm a little more dubious on that. And the other thing is, like,
I'm just saying they have to be more purposeful in their decisions.
Yeah, they have to explore everything. Like, nothing can be off the table.
There's no reason, Jonas, that they have to wait to think about an extension with Riley. I think they need to figure out what that number looks like and decide if that makes sense or not. Because if you just sit on the fence and you don't force yourself to make a decision, you're hurting the viability of your team. As you said with Matthews and Nylander, well, I don't see how you're not hurting your viability with the team.
Well, because you may decide Morgan Riley is better to help your team contend for a cup next year than not. You're right about the Pacioretty trade. So Montreal traded Pacioretty for a second round pick.
Was it Tatar?
Nick Suzuki and Thomas Tatar.
That was a good trade for Montreal.
It's a good trade. Although, Pacioretty is still really good.
So that's the kind of trade that I would want them to make.
Okay.
Drouin was another one. They traded him. I mean, he was RFA, but a little bit different. But
for Sergachev, but
Dougie
that's
Hamilton
not the
got traded to Carolina. How many years did he have left on his deal?
That was for Noah Hanifin. That's an okay one.
That's the kind of thing that they need to look at. They either need to, if you trade for a lesser player with Riley, you need to free up some more cap space, which is hard to do because he only makes $5 million. I just think that that's just one of the things that's on the table for them. I'm not saying that that's the main one, but that's something they got to look at and think about.
Sure.
And then you got to look at the core. You got to you have to look at the core.
Well, all right, let's just get into that. I started to wonder after I wrote my story about the setup of the team paying four guys as much as they are paid, whether that works or whether it's going to be something else that they just decide like there's something rotten here or something that doesn't work, and that it might not even have to do with whether it works to build a team like this, and maybe they just decide like we need to do something because
I actually think, Jonas, it's a little bit of both. You know,
I think that's probably right.
I think that those factors combined together.
It's really hard. It's really, really like so I've been all in on this approach. Like I really think it makes sense. I believe in stars, but stars have to be stars for it to work. Otherwise, and you're very, very, very vulnerable, like to injury, to guys struggling. It just leaves you very little room for error is kind of the lesson I've learned from this.
It's felt like that in the past. Like, remember when Matthews has had injuries and been out of the lineup? It's like, man, like when you're missing an $11 million player, like your team is very ordinary.
Yeah. Although they survived it pretty good in a handful of games this year.
The other thing I would say too, a lot of people are really going after Kyle Dubas today for the way the roster's constructed. They thought the salary cap would be 88, 89, and 89 million right now. And that's just something that's a world factor. But I think in light of that, you have to adjust your approach. You know, if you felt comfortable with Matthews and Marner and Tavares all making the money and Nylander to a much lesser extent, all making the money they are making, under an 88 or a $90 million cap when you sign those deals at this point, when they're, you know, 3 or 4 years into the contracts, because that's what they thought was going to happen. How do you feel about those numbers? There wasn't enough left on the roster for everything else. Like
there's no room, right? Like you have to master everything else basically, right?
They've tried for multiple years now, 3 years to fit the little Jenga pieces
I like that.
Put little
Tetris.
Except, Tetris is better. Because Jenga, you pull the piece out, so that doesn't make any sense. And then the tower collapses, and then my metaphor is not working. Yeah, Tetris. Like, so they've got these little tiny holes, or like Dr. Mario or something. Like, they got these little holes, and they need to, like, fit. It's like, okay, we got 700 grand for, like, our bottom seven forwards, and okay. Or, like, their backup, like, look at the backup goalie mistakes that they've made. And you take away these little bits here and there and here and there.
Yeah. And it adds up.
Yeah.
And that's why like the Nick Foligno trade is really difficult, because that's like you'd written all these good stories kind of informing their cap situation. And I remember one you wrote early in the season, or maybe even before the season, that if they did this right, they would have space to add someone and add someone significant. And so that's like kind of not your trump card, but like that's like a little sneaky ace up your sleeve. And if you hit on it, great. Like that's how you can kind of master some of this margin work we're talking about. But if you miss, like you've spoiled an opportunity to give yourself an extra bit of juice. And it just felt risky at the time. Like Nick Foligno's 33, he's declining. It was just hard to imagine that he was going to be able to give them enough with some of those like intangible kind of stuff to be more valuable than Taylor Hall. And like,
even let's just take Taylor Hall out of the equation. Like Nick Foligno gave them nothing, and that trade was a complete waste of time. It was, you know, you lost your first round pick. I think that probably the frustrating thing if you're a Leafs fan is, I mean, you lost a first round pick for the bad Marlowe signing, and now you lost a first round pick and 2 fourth round picks for Nick Foligno who gave you absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
He seems like a great guy. The other thing I think is frustrating about the Foligno thing is the reason they didn't have the depth on the roster in part was they brought in all these leadership guys. Then you need another one at the trade deadline. You need Riley Nash because no one else can play defense at center. And then you need Ben Hutton because you don't trust your depth on defense. And then you need, you know, a fourth goalie because you can't trust your third goalie. I don't know.
I felt at the trade deadline that they were overcompensating for what happened last year. by just going too hard on that. And they'd kind of, like, I thought you made a good point in your story that they've kind of forgot who they are a little bit. Like,
well, you know what it looks like to me? I don't know this. No one in that, in the Leafs organization is going to put their hand up and say, I did this. This was my decision. But it looks like to me there's different voices that want different things, you know, and I'm speculating, but, you know, I think that probably Shanahan pushed for more experience and leadership. And I think that that's good. I think that that's positive to a point. And, you know, as I point out at the top of the story, getting Jake Muzzin and getting Jason Spezza has been a huge positive for this team. Those guys have been great. They've played up to their contracts. They've become leaders on the team. But do you need like five more guys, six more guys?
No, you can have two of them who maybe can't contribute that much on the ice, but you can't have four or five.
And the other thing too,
or whatever.
Sorry
it is.
If I'm talking too much. The other thing too is, like, you can't be afraid. Like, when they signed Joe Thornton and Wayne Simmons, it's like, okay, this is fine. If they don't perform, they're not making a lot of money. You can't be afraid to sit those guys. Like, they played poorly and they were in the lineup every single night. You're in game seven. They have done fuck all, and they're still playing.
To be fair, like, who would you play instead?
I don't know. Somebody who has a pulse, man. Like, I don't, like, they didn't. It's
more like, we can get into Sheldon Keefe in a bit, but some of the adjustments like that did not, there weren't
what
enough
adjustments.
Like, well, yeah. I mean, like, that's a coach's job in a playoff series, is to kind of steer things when they get rough. And he struggled with that. There's the power play. There's some of the lineup decisions. There's Rasmus Sandin. I didn't love the way that was handled. But, like, man, like, it's really hard to win when your two best guys, who just had maybe the two greatest seasons by Leafs ever, like, they just increasingly became different players. Like,
and, yeah,
after game five, they really looked tight, and they didn't look like they had much.
They looked tired
energy.
Too, man.
They, like, looked tired.
Yeah.
And that's something you can come back to with Sheldon Keefe. And like, Mike Babcock took a lot of shit for not playing those guys more. And you could argue they should have played a little bit more, but maybe 22 and a half minutes for Mitch Marner during a condensed regular season is too much. And maybe they'll run out of juice.
I've been talking to people around the organization, and it's fair to say that players were feeling the condensed schedule, and that it was affecting their ability. This is not Marner or Matthews complaining about that, but just, like, you know, other Leafs players. It was hard. It was a hard season in terms of the demands of the schedule. Where did among forwards in the NHL, where did Marner and Matthews rank? Wasn't Marner number one?
Marner was
two,
I believe, here, behind McDavid. And
up.
Matthews is what?
I'm bringing it up right now. Marner was number one, Jonas.
Oh, was he?
During the season, he played 22-26.
Yeah.
Wow. And he's, like, pretty significantly. Like, he's like almost half a minute ahead of Connor McDavid. And Matthews was number five.
Mm-hmm.
They probably played too much, especially with Matthews being hurt.
Well, they playing Matthews a month while he was hurt.
Threw that back-to-back in the middle of the playoffs, and it's like, Jesus. Like, I know they had some time off before the playoffs started, but they just, I don't know, they just looked like they didn't have it. And part of that, too, you know, I had some people that were watching the game around the league were texting me last night during the game, and they said that, you said you were going to talk about the coach, but, like, that they didn't look like they adjusted. You know, it's... There were some things tactically that Montreal was doing that was making it extremely difficult on the Leafs players, and that can make you look slow, and that can make you look confused, and it can make you look bad if you don't have the right game plan to counteract what Montreal's doing. Can make you look pretty bad.
They had a hard time getting through the neutral zone and getting
well, I was pointing out
going.
To you, we were up in the box, and it's like, look at, like, I don't know if this is the right time to discuss it, but, like, essentially, Sheldon Keefe's approach is, like, he wants, you know, kind of like the possession. He wants the players to, like, move as a unit. He wants them to, like, make passes moving up the ice. But what they were allowing Montreal to get set up in the neutral zone again and again, and they were lining five guys right, not even, I mean, in the neutral zone, but, like, really close to their own blue line. Like, they were, it reminded me of, like, Germany in the Olympics or something, like one of those really conservative teams. It's almost like a soccer style. I remember you and I, after, was it during game three or game four, we were critical of Ducharme and kind of.
Yeah.
His performance.
The safe approach.
I mean, he did a good job in the last three games. He adjusted.
Well, let's come back to Keefe because I want to stay on Matthews and Marner. Obviously, Marner seems to be taking the most heat for his series. I understand it. He's one of the highest paid players in the league. This is part of the responsibility. Like, he's paid to produce. It really felt like he was kind of feeling the pressure of the contract, of being a hometown player, of the expectations that he needs to produce. Like, it just increasingly felt like that was weighing him down. And like, you got to remember, he just turned 24. Like, I know we like to think of them as like these, like, I don't know, like superheroes. He's like just a kid. Like, he's just, you know what I mean? Like, and he didn't perform well and increasingly looked like he was just out of sorts.
He's an adult. He's, you know, was he?
That's bordering
23, 24 years old. I mean, like,
he's 24. He just turned 24.
Like, that's when pro athletes are in their peak. And when, like how old's Nathan MacKinnon? How old's Cale Makar? I mean, you've been watching Colorado play. How old was?
Yeah, I'm just saying he's a human, man. Like, he's not immune to feeling.
You know, some guys, Jonas, are more human than others too, if that's the right way to put it. Some guys some people are impacted by it. Like, you know, I couldn't do that. Have you ever had to try to perform in, you know, I used to play, I'm trying to think of a parallel. I used to play in a band. And I remember when, you know, we would play in a band and there were some shows you were in a crappy bar and it's like 30 people. And it's like, that's easy. But then there were some shows, like we play like a festival or whatever, and there'd be like 400, 500 people there. It's like, holy cow. Like, you know, all of a sudden it gets harder and harder. And like, these guys are trying to do it, you know, and when you're in a band, when you're on a team, you're not out there by yourself either. But I can't imagine being on TV with 5 million people watching and, you know, the building obviously wasn't full, but the pressure on those guys is unbelievable. And it's, some guys handle it better than others. And the Leafs players didn't handle it well.
No.
Again.
Well, so let me ask you, how much would that factor into your decision with maybe moving someone like Marner, how the playoffs have gone? Now, obviously, this is three playoffs in a row where he has struggled. He's gone 18 straight games without a goal in the playoffs.
I actually don't.
He's had a lot of chance. Like, he had a lot of chances and didn't score. But like, that's the job, right? Like, you have to, like, he's paid to finish. You know what I mean? Or set up opportunities for others.
I was thinking about this last night. I don't think it's that much different than the Kadri decision. You know, it's at some point, you know, you give someone chances, you see what they do, and if they show you what's that saying? You know.
Fool me once.
Yeah. Like, you know, if someone shows you who they are once, you know, maybe it's chance. But if they show you who they are three times, that's who they are.
Well, and I recall that, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I recall at some point along the way, Brendan Shanahan mentioning that, like, how players perform in the playoffs means something.
Tells you something. Yeah.
But then, like, these things can change. Like, Nylander obviously had this reputation of not performing in the playoffs. Earned.
I guess the question,
this playoff, though, he was better.
Jonas said, like, if your job was resting on the line, let's say you were,
I'm the GM,
president,
I'm
the captain, or GM of the Leafs.
Okay.
And it's your dream job and you're making millions of dollars and you want to keep it. You want to do whatever you can to keep that job and you just want the team to succeed. Are you going to bet your career and your livelihood on someone who you've seen hasn't been able to get it done multiple times? That's going to be the question they're going to have to, you know, do they think it's going to change the next time? If the answer is no, that they don't think it's going to change next time, then you have to make a change.
I would explore everything is probably what I would say. I would look at every potential opportunity to move those guys and try to get better. But I would also be very, very, very careful because, I mean, you can feel it in the market today. Like, there is emotion and frustration and anger, and like, they have to do something, and there is a risk of doing something and doing something wrong that sets you back badly and makes you worse. We've seen that repeatedly.
What I was talking about with the Riley thing, it's like you're saying, like, if you can't find a trade, then no. But, you know, all I'm saying is they're going to need to explore a lot more avenues than they did last season. Last season, they went into the offseason Let's add a defenseman like TJ Brody. Let's fill in around the edges again with some guys that we like, and we're going to run back. I mean, the team wasn't that much different. It was like six different guys than last season. There's going to be more substantial change for next year. I feel pretty confident saying that.
Well, they're going to lose someone to expansion, obviously. And that might be Alex Kerfoot, which leaves a pretty big hole at center. And that's like, to go back to the front office, that is something that they did not address adequately enough. I mean, the fact that they, and you can put this on Sheldon Keefe, you can put this on management, but the fact that when their second best center went out, they decided to use a 33-year-old winger in that spot.
Who was playing on one leg.
He says something, right?
I think that my understanding is last offseason they wanted to add a center and they looked at some of them, and it comes back to they didn't have a lot of money to throw around. Like, you know, I think that I think they looked at like that Walmart and some guys like that, but they really could have used some more options at center. This has been a problem for years now that they haven't had enough options at center. I mean, I guess since Kadri was traded.
But like, this is the limitations when your team is built this way. Like, you're vulnerable. Like one of those guys goes out and you just don't have a lot. And this kind of comes back to the way the roster was built. We do have to mention that they don't have John Tavares for basically the whole series. They don't have Jake Muzzin for the last couple games, but injuries happen. Like they're not the first team to suffer injuries in the playoffs. And like lots of teams win with injured players, key injured players. And they just didn't have enough.
From what I've heard, it sounds like the Muzzin one was partly related to like the condensed schedule and wear and tear. And
well, it clearly looked to be a groin injury, and that's the kind of thing that is wear and tear, right?
It's one of the things too with the team's going to get older. You know,
the team is old. Yeah. He's 32. Like he's not.
The Leafs are whatever young. Fifth or sixth oldest team in the league in the playoffs. So maybe even more with Foligno in the lineup. And I didn't add it all up. You're going to have more injuries. So, yeah. Don't you think though, Jonas, like coming into the, I just think that my approach will be a little bit different. I think I'm going to be a lot more skeptical about everything that they do going forward here, just because, I mean, I think that maybe in the fan base and in the media and maybe the bar, just like I said earlier, needs to be Colorado or Vegas or like Tampa. Like that should be the bar that we measure them against. And I mean, it's great you win Rocket Richard or you put up a lot of assists or whatever, but at the end of the day, if this team had no chance of beating those teams, what's the point? If you're an old team running through the remaining years of the contracts of your stars and you can't beat the best teams in the league, what you've put together isn't good enough.
It's kind of crystallizing for me that maybe it can't work. Maybe you can't do it like this. Like, let me ask you this. If you took Marner's 10.9 and turned that into, maybe you turn it into another star who makes whatever, or maybe you turn it into two or three players.
You could turn it into a hell of a third line or like a second line. Like you could, you could have two guys making $4 million and then another $2 million goes on the third line, or
the problem though is like you would be trading the 24-year-old and keeping the 31-year-old, soon to be 31-year-old, who is declining. And that's a problem. And I don't know what you can do about that because, you know, John Tavares has a no movement clause. I mean, there are ways to get around that, obviously, if he's amenable to that, but
I can't imagine, like, there's no, people have been asking, like, why would he want out? Like, this team and this role and everything was his dream, you know? Like,
well, and I mean, why is someone trading for him at this point? So, it's a tough one.
Marner for Eichel, Jonas. Why don't they do that?
I would do that. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you have to explore. Now, I don't know if that's something Buffalo is into, but you have to talk about that kind of thing.
I know Columbus always liked Marner, right? Like they were the team that was rumored with the offer sheet and everything. And Columbus is hurting right now.
Yeah, you could get funky. You could, I mean, I don't know about trading for, I mean, I guess you could trade for Seth Jones. You could try to trade for Zach Korenski.
Hmm.
everything's kind of got to be on the table. Like, they've got to explore all these different things.
Isn't Wierenski friends with Matthews?
Americans. American development.
I believe they played on that team together, yeah.
And then maybe that opens up.
I'm worried, like, I don't want this show to get, like, all sports radio hot takey, but there's not really any way we can avoid these conversations. I mean, like, those aren't even hot take conversations, I don't think. Like, I think this is
what they're going to have to do.
This is really what they're going to do. Like, I know the fan base is really frustrated, and maybe they'll find this cathartic that we're talking about how to, like, pull apart this team that laid a big turd on the ice.
All right. Well, let's take a second and listen to Morgan Riley in our quote of the week, talking about the disappointment and missing of expectations this season.
You think it's my fault? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Well, yeah, he was just screaming in my ear, so I had to kind of start singing along with him. But you know, he's a big fan of that song. He plays it in the car sometimes, so he definitely is a big Bon Jovi guy.
It's been a lot of ups and downs, you know, a lot of emotions and a lot of great teammates that's passed by.
Just being around this useful energy, that gets me excited, and they got a lot of it here. But yeah, just soak it all in. You know, I feel like I'm, you know, young again. It's a good feeling to be in.
I need more emotion. We need more emotion from everybody. We need people to get angry. We need people to step up and be mad and take it personally.
It was just okay. I've been waiting a long time for that. So you guys can package that someplace, okay?
Obviously, it's as hard as it gets. I think that the expectation within the room was higher, like you said. The goals are higher than what we achieve this year. It makes the disappointment much worse. I mean, we feel it and we realize that, you know, we let an opportunity slip and that's, you know, not acceptable, you know, by our standards. It makes the loss a lot worse than anything we've had to deal with before.
So that is Morgan Riley, and he is right. This is a team that was supposed to contend for a cup, not get eliminated in the first round. And like, I remember Kyle Dubas, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, said like they need tangible progress. Like, they need some sign that they're actually getting closer to their goals. So maybe let's actually take a break and then talk a little bit about management and the coaching staff and what is to come there. Let's break and get into that.
Yeah, I should say, well, I can mention this on the other side, but you know, the other thing we should talk about, and I know it's not like a super sexy thing, but it's a factor here, is the ownership side of this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, James, I'll let you take the floor just about the ownership and management. And
so I mentioned this in my story, and then if you read, Pierre LeBrun has a story up at The Athletic right now. He gets into this more. Pierre went more in detail into this than I did, which was smart. I probably should have done this, but I was writing at 2 a.m. and my brain was a mush pancake. Here's what Pierre wrote in his story, and I recommend everyone goes and reads it and make sure you sign up and subscribe to hate read about the team that keeps breaking your heart. Pierre writes, before I get into it, though, a thought of my own. I think what's going to be most interesting is how the MLSC board of directors react to this setback. My sense is the patient's status quo option is not going to be a welcome answer for ownership. Not when MLSC is doling out millions in July 1 bonuses to some of these players and still paying Mike Babcock $5.875 million through June 2023 to not coach. While it may be that staying patient and believing in the Leafs core and not overreacting is the route to go hockey-wise, I'm not sure the people in suits at MLSC are going to go for that business-wise. I don't know who's saying that to Pierre, but the reason I had it in my story is I'm hearing similar things.
Well, so what they're going to have to do, if you're Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas, is you're going to have to convince them that your vision is still the right one, or tell them that your vision is going to be changed and you're going to do something different.
I think they're going to have to say that we're changing in this way and this is why and this is how it's going to work.
Do you think that they are the right people to continue leading the team?
I think that their time may begin to start running out unless they have more answers, is what I would say. I don't think anyone's getting let go right now. This talk of ownership and the board and all this, this is about them losing patience. It's not about them firing everybody. I don't think we're at that point yet.
Well, next season would be Brendan Shanahan's 8th. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's not a short amount of time. It's a long time. And the team, let's be honest, like the team has grown considerably in terms of talent, but you need results. Like, it's nice that you have these pieces and these attractive young players, but unless it actually translates into winning, it's tough to sell.
So Jonas, right? Like, we've got time here. I think we have to get into some listener questions at some point, and I think you probably have some other things on your list too, but like, I think part of how we ended up here was kind of weird, the way that we ended up here, like through the 7 years, you know, like when Shanahan started, he didn't have experience as a team executive. That was, you know, I remember having initial skepticism. Like, I had the chance, Brendan Shanahan came to the Global Mail's boardroom and we had a meeting with him for an hour and had a conversation. And, you know, the skepticism was he didn't have a lot of experience. And then he built this front office that was kind of real Frankenstein with Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas and eventually Lou Lamoriello and Dave Nonis was there. And then they hire Mike Babcock before they have the GM. And it was really kind of like a lot of parts thrown together in a lot of weird ways. And somehow through that all, they made some pretty good decisions. Like you're talking about, you know, the team got a lot better. But I don't know. I remember at the beginning, you know, I remember one of the questions I asked Brendan Shanahan was, why are you keeping Randy Carlyle? Like, it was, you know, when he started, it felt clear as day that he was not the right coach. And then they, you know, they completely nuked the whole next season, having him come in and coach again. And that was when, you know, he got fired in midseason. Like, if they would have brought someone in new that year, they could have, to me, started to make some progress a little bit sooner. But anyway, that's ancient history.
Well, I would agree that I think they need, or they should get a little more time. I don't think it's time right now. I think they've done a lot of good things, but like a lot of things haven't worked. Like Mark Hunter's time, and he may dispute this, but they don't have a lot coming, and they haven't gotten a ton from the draft aside from some of the top guys and the odd guy here and there. Like, you look for next year, James, what is coming? Like, maybe Nick Robertson, maybe Rasmus Sandin, what else?
It's good you bring up those drafts. I mean, I've gone back and talked to some people about, you know, the 15 and the 16 draft, and I've talked to people, you know, like who are in the organization or who have left or whatever. And it was like, who was in charge? And in some years it was like unclear who was in charge. Like, it was kind of like a hodgepodge. Like, it was almost like they're taking turns making decisions or something. Like, remember that 2015 draft? And, you know, yeah. Dubas was trading back, but Hunter was ostensibly in charge of the picks. But was he, if the picks were getting traded before he made the, I don't know. There was just, and again, that's like ancient history, but
it matters now.
That's when the drafts, like, if you screw up a draft 5 or 6 years ago, you don't have the players banked. And
no, which means like you need to go under free agency and you feel compelled to sign some of the guys that they signed.
And then you trade a bunch of future picks to bring people in, and then
yeah,
you set yourself back. Well, and
even like you mentioned the Babcock decision, even that was not handled very well. Like, if they were going to fire Mike Babcock, it should have been after that season, as opposed to 23 games into the next season, which kind of screwed up that season. And like, and
it was unclear.
TBD.
It was unclear.
TBD on Sheldon Keefe, right? Like, there's been a lot of good, but I don't know that you can say definitively that he's done a better job than Mike Babcock did or would have done.
It still remains unclear whether Shanahan, you know, blocked Dubas. Like, I can't imagine Dubas wanted to bring Babcock back that year. Can't imagine. Remember, he like left him twisting in the wind, and like, it was so.
I asked him that on the record, and he refused or declined to answer, is the better way to put it.
It was so dysfunctional what happened that year after that 2019 loss to Boston. That's not really on your like second year GM who's 34 years old or whatever. It's not.
No, and I mean, they hired him, or they replaced him with a coach who had never coached in the NHL, period. And we have seen a lot of good things from Sheldon Keefe in his...
Well, I think if you do that, Jonas, you have to be prepared. There's going to be some growing pains, so...
And there have been growing pains. Like, this is a team trying to win a cup. Like, I don't... Yeah. Can you afford growing pains? I don't know.
From the GM and the coach.
Yeah, the GM too.
And the,
yeah,
and, you're right. And the president. And it'll be interesting. I wonder if they try and change the mix in the front office and give Kyle Dubas someone... How should I put this? If they bring in someone with a lot of experience to kind of change the mix there, I imagine the coaching staff will change, and that Sheldon, you know, there was a lot of talk last offseason about getting someone with a lot of experience in to coach with Sheldon Keefe, and that's where the Bruce Boudreau conversations were, and they ended up not doing that.
No, they did. They brought in Paul McLean.
Okay. Someone like more high profile and like who's had a lot of success. And
well, and I recall there was uncertainty. I believe you wrote this at the
Paul
time.
Paul McLean, they had Hackstall sitting up in the box. Like, he wasn't even on the bench.
Yeah, but like, he's in all the meetings and everything like that. He's not traveling, but he's in there. But like,
I mean, someone with some really significant...
He has significant coaching experience, man. I don't know what else you want.
Some heft to them. Some stature. If they could find, you know, like Bruce Boudreau's on a different...
What's the difference between Bruce Boudreau and Paul McLean?
Bruce Boudreau coached a lot of, you know, he coached a bunch of 110-point teams. And
I mean, Paul McLean was on like the staff, I think, of all those Red
Wing teams. You know what one of the differences, Jonas, is that Bruce Boudreau knows how to run a good power play.
Well, and the question of whether Manny Malhotra will be back is an interesting one. The question of whether Dave Haxtell will be back is an interesting one. Like, maybe they change. That's one thing teams often do, is change the assistant coaches. And in this case, it might be warranted based on the way things went.
Yeah, people were surprised that Haxtell was back this year.
Let's talk a little bit about Sheldon Keefe and some of the things that didn't go right. What comes to mind first for you?
He seemed very reluctant to change. It seemed like it took
a... Which is a little ironic, I would think.
He believed so strongly in kind of like the lines and the system and what he was doing, that it was going to work, that he seemed to stick with it. The best the Leafs looked in the last three games of the series, I want to say, was the end of game six, right? Where they came back and he shuffled the lines and Spezza was up on the second line with Nylander and Kerfoot, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they really had a huge push. And Spezza scores, Brody gets the goal, they have some momentum. They played really well in overtime, and it was just, you know, Montreal got one shot that...
Well, and then they changed those lines in overtime.
Yeah, it's like, so in overtime, so they play really, really well. They get the tying goal, they got a lot of momentum, and then it's right back to what wasn't working for two games, almost two full games. And then in game seven, I was like, I wonder what they're going to switch up, and they went right back to everything again that they did... I don't know.
Well, and they didn't... You were pointing this out while the game was happening. Like, we kept waiting for something to change, because it was very clear after half the game that top line just didn't have it, and that you needed to do something.
But like I was saying too, during the game, they, like, Marner and Matthews had played every single shift of the season together the whole year.
Yeah, to be fair, we gave Sheldon Keefe plenty of credit for that decision. It's tougher when you don't have John Tavares, right? Like,
well, yeah. Well, because you know where Marner can play. You know Marner can play with Tavares, right? You don't know, like, what's Marner's going to be centered by Kerfoot?
Kerfoot, right? Exactly, and that gets back to the roster.
But they probably should have looked at some of the... They probably should have had some different looks at during the season at some point. Like, I don't know, man. Like, this is where we get into, Jonas, where we're like kind of like... It's very, very hindsight driven, some of the stuff, because like...
Yeah, but so some of it is not hindsight driven, James. Like, so the Rasmus Sandin situation is not hindsight driven.
No, but like the Marner Matthews stuff is like...
Oh yeah, that's I agree. That's why I'm saying, like, we gave him plenty of credit. No, we didn't have any problem with that during the season. But the Rasmus Sandin thing, I think, is worthy of some discussion. Like, so he has the situation, what was it, game one, where... He struggles, couple goals against, both goals against, actually. Keefe comes back with him, which a lot of coaches wouldn't have played him in the first place. Like, he didn't have half a season of NHL experience. He'd played nine games during the regular season. He comes back with him. He scores a big goal. Then he plays him again. Then he takes him out for some reason to get Travis Dermott some time, which felt like looking ahead. Then he puts him back in. Sandin has an really tough game, on the ice for two goals against, makes a couple bad turnovers, plays 6 minutes, then he comes out. So like that kind of stuff, the power play is something we've been harping on for a while. It took until game seven of the first round for them to put William Nylander in Mitch Marner's spot, and it seemed to work. I don't know why it took as long as it did. Like it was clear that looked, yeah, on the power play, it was clear for a long time.
Well, they had that one great chance, right, where it went over to Nylander, across to Nylander, and Price made an amazing save.
Yeah, and Nylander also set up Matthews, was playing the bumper spot. Matthews had this great one-time look. It just took too long for that stuff to happen. Like they kept.
Well, didn't they go to that with like? Wasn't there only like 12 minutes left in the game or something like that?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is like there was so much herky jerkiness to their approach on the power play. Like they would change something and they said we're sticking to it, and then literally after one power play they change it again, and then they change it the next game, and then they'd go back to the loaded up unit, and then they'd go into two balance. Like they couldn't really decide what they wanted to do with their power play. And their power play cost them. Like in game six and seven, there were opportunities for their power play to come through for them and didn't happen.
It seems like there's something wrong with the process if the answer you come up with is Joe Thornton on the first power play unit when he's playing. Like I think that game seven potentially is the last game that Joe Thornton ever plays in the NHL. I mean, it probably is.
He did not look like a player who could continue.
Unless he goes back to San Jose as like a fourth line guy or something. I don't know.
But they've tried that.
It sucks to say because Joe Thornton seems like an amazing guy. He's had an unbelievable career, but it's pretty brutal for a day in that way.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, James, I always mention this before the pod bag, to eat at your local restaurants and support your local businesses. And honestly, James, I wanted to shout out the frontline workers. We should have done this like many times before. They were at the game on Monday night. And I was just like, man, you know, like when I got vaccinated, all I could think of was how much gratitude I felt for the people there working. Like that is a fucking hustle and hard. Like this year has been hard enough for everyone. Imagine like being in all of that every day for however long this has gone on. Like that, they deserve so much of our respect and gratitude. So
my mother's not a doctor or a nurse, but she worked at a hospital that was her job my whole life. So and she had cancer a couple of times, so she spent a lot of time in the hospital. So unfortunately I spent a lot of my childhood in around the hospital, and it's a different breed of person that you know, my mother was friends with lots of doctors and nurses, and it takes a special person to do those jobs, especially in times of crisis, which is what we've been living in. So yes. It was pretty, I don't know what it looked like on TV because obviously we were in the building, but you know, you and I could really see really well some of the sections of the fans, and you could tell it was emotional for some of the people that were there, that they felt gratitude that they had been thanked in this way. And, it's too bad that, I mean, the game was so crappy, but you know, I think it meant a lot to those people, and it kind of, you know, I was right there when the first people started coming in, the first fans, and even for the staff that were working, like they had to bring in more staff to, you know, security guards and concession people and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was a big moment for them too. You know, that when I was there and the first people were coming in, one of the security guards sort of, you know, had a big voice and said, you know, for the first time and whatever, you know, there's fans back at Scotiabank Arena. And it was, and you could just tell there was a lot of emotion. So it was pretty interesting.
Agreed. And I got to say, to bring it back to like local businesses, I'm so happy to see patios potentially opening again. I am going all in on pizza tonight, James. Getting some Batondo's, my favorite pizza place in the city.
I ate a lot of pizza in the press box last night. I don't think I need it again tonight.
All right. Well, let's jump into the pod bag. I'm sure there are some good questions in there.
Okay. Homebody wants to know, seriously, is there some bad mojo or something that happened throughout the years that keeps making them come out flat? 0-7 with this core is pretty unacceptable. I mean, it feels it's just like in their heads now. We've said this for years too. I mean, it was in the heads of those old Carlisle teams too, right? Like when they were collapsing and even Ron Wilson, but those weren't very good teams. But it just seemed like they would snowball and they couldn't pull out of it. And now this team's doing it too. And it's like none of the players are the same.
Here's what's difficult about that, James, I find is up until this year and last, they really weren't like better than any of those teams. Like they weren't better than Washington. They weren't better than either of those Boston teams. And those series went to game sevens. There was the Kadri situation. Their best guys were still young. Like I don't know how much I can ding them up for that. But these last two, you can ding them up. These last two are not good. Yep. They should, granted, the regular season was not good last year and they had this long pause. They have to beat Columbus and they have to beat Montreal. They're better.
The only thing I would say add to that is that the Boston series, like it was right there for them to, you know, like they were up 3-2 in the series. And the way they played that game seven was really kind of pathetic too, right? So, but I agree with you. I mean, Boston was the better team and all of those things. And it's really been, you know, the Columbus series and this series where they just have failed to step up when they needed to.
Well, and James, like the margins are really small. Like that first goal that goes in on Jack Campbell, that can't go in a game seven. And that's very reminiscent of some of the goals.
His team couldn't score though. Like he can let in one bad goal.
Not in that game, man. Like they needed to get the first goal, and if he makes that save,
I can't blame Jack Campbell. Given how well he played, all series. He was one of their best players.
I'm saying he had a great series.
Well, bail the guy out for one bad goal then in the series.
Yeah, but here's the thing: like in a game like that, you could feel that
you're playing the 18th best team in the league.
In a game like that, you could feel that they couldn't give up the first goal. Like they were too fragile, and that's on that. Like that's as much on them as it is on anyone. But that puck needs to be stopped. It just does. And who knows what happens if he makes that save? Is all I'm saying.
This is a good segue to our next question. Muller Cleese asks: is it safe to presume we've seen the last of Freddie? Yes, it is safe to presume that. If so, what would be a good path forward and goal? Campbell is number one with a clear backup. 1A, 1B. I mean, I think you try and get the. You can answer this if you want, Jonas. I think you try and get the best second goalie that you can, and hopefully it's someone who you feel comfortable splitting starts with and that can win you a lot of games. But, you know, Jack Campbell played well enough that I think that at minimum he's your tandem guy.
I would try to get someone like who could potentially be the starter. Now, like one of the names that – there's not a lot of names out there. Like there's not a lot of guys out there. I mean, does Chris Driedger – make you feel enough comfort? Like he hasn't done it for very long. He had a pretty good year in Florida.
I think he's going to Seattle is what I've been hearing. So
okay, well, so that then you're getting into like our old favorites, James Reimer, Jonathan Bernier. They could also trade for someone. Like they could, I mean, they didn't want to in the past. They could decide to trade for Darcy Kemper or someone like that.
What about get Darcy Kemper and have Arizona retain half the salary, and then you got him
maybe get some other pieces in that trade. I don't know.
Return of Phil? Is that what you're thinking?
Definitely. He had a great year. How many years does that contract have left on it? A couple more?
I believe it's only one more season. Yeah, because wow. I was looking at the Leafs cap situation for next year, and they've still got that retention of Kessel for one more year.
Man. Do you think he just retires after that? Like, do you think it's just over for him?
I don't know. That guy's... You know, his natural ability is unbelievable.
So, he did have a pretty good finish to the season.
He could probably be a fourth line guy and on the power
20
play.
20 goals, 43 points. I'm sure he likes 56 games.
I mean, I haven't. Phil and I haven't kept in touch. He wasn't a big fan.
What?
He wasn't a big fan of me by the end of the. He didn't. I think I've told this story before. He didn't like one of my puns one time, and it didn't go over very well. So
nobody likes your puns.
Well, that's not.
I'm true. Just kidding. Some people do. Lots of people do.
The crickets like them.
The crickets love them.
Mother Cleese has some other questions that are pretty good. He asks, the two most likely expansion targets are Kerfoot and Dermott. They both played pretty well in the playoffs. Does that affect what they do in the expansion draft? I mean, I think that I haven't looked at it close enough to think about if they should change what they do in the expansion draft. Do you have any thoughts on that? I know you're going to have a story on that probably later today, right?
Not on the expansion draft.
Well, that's going to be one of the things you mentioned.
That will be in there. Yeah, I mean, they could decide to go in different directions. Like, some of this will depend on Zach Hyman. Do they sign him before? Do they let him get to free agency? What do they do with Justin Hall? Like, do they decide we'll expose Justin Hall and protect someone else, like Travis Terman? They could go in a lot of different directions, right? Like, maybe it kind of feels like Kerfoot might be the guy they end up losing. Like, he was one of their three or four best players in that series. He finished second on the team in scoring, remarkably.
Some interesting proposals in here with people are talking about, you know, the expansion draft. There might be teams that are going to lose guys that they don't want to lose, and they might be willing to trade them, and they might open up some options for the Leafs. So maybe the expansion is part of. Fuzzbit says, can we talk about the risk of going all in at the deadline? This draft is going to be brutal. I mean, we're not good.
I'm not sure they went all in. I don't like that perception.
They traded 6 picks.
Yeah, but like a lot of those picks are like fourth round picks. Like, I don't know. That's not all in to me. All in to me would have been trading a first and trading like Sandin or trading Robertson. I don't think it's all in. Was it a good trade? No. It did not work out.
6 picks is a lot for one deadline, especially with a bunch of guys that contributed 0.
Well, and that was part of the argument people made about trading for Foligno is like you got all this insurance with all those other guys. I felt at the time I'd rather just have Hall. I'd rather just have Taylor Hall and gamble on the other stuff.
How will you feel about it if Taylor Hall is lifting the Stanley Cup in another 5 weeks? Will that change your opinion?
Me?
I'm just joking. I'm just being stupid.
Okay.
Sundin's Flow says, is there any precedent for changing GMs and leadership every few years and having it pay off? I kind of want Dubas to stay, create some stability. Feels yes. Like if we change direction every other season, it's a bad path. Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think having some sort of continuity, that's part of what I worry about and wrote about after Game 7 is that it seemed like they started trying to go in a pretty dramatically different direction, and trying to do that every offseason feels like a bad idea.
Well, and go across the league, I mean, go across Canada. How many teams have what you would call competent management? I don't think it's very many. Like, you can criticize some of what they've done, but they are a more than competent front office. Like, they don't really do anything that you're like, man, that was really, what were they thinking? Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, Calgary, their front office is facing a lot of heat. Vancouver, Montreal.
That brings me back to, though, this idea of setting the bar too low. That, like, do you want to settle for being a 7 out of 10 organization, or do you want to try and get to where the best teams in the league are? And before these playoffs, I probably would have said 8 out of 10. So
there was a time not that long ago where Colorado was considered the laughingstock of the league.
4 years ago.
Right. They had maybe the worst season in NHL history of the worst.
I went back last night because it's mentioned in my story that Dubas almost went to Colorado. They were in last place.
Yeah. And Joe Sakic was thought of as this inept executive.
Now he's going to win GM of the year every year. And, you know, part of that was Joe Sakic pivoted. He brought in some smart people and they changed their philosophy. And it completely changed that organization.
Yeah, they stopped relying on these big galoof defensemen and got all these younger little studs. I guess Cale Makar's not little, but Sam Girard certainly is. He's not big. Yeah,
Sam Girard is so small. I wrote a story about him a couple of years ago, and I'm 6'5". I'm standing next to him in the dressing room, and he's saying he's listed at 160. It's crazy. I think he told me he was 170, but I mean,
who do you think would win in a fight, Sam Gerard or Jared Spurgeon?
I wouldn't bet against Spurgeon, man. That guy looks, he's small, but he looks tough.
He is tough.
You've tried to fight him?
A few times. I took him out, but it was a good fight.
How can the team stock with cheap but skilled depth with only 5 draft picks over the next 2 seasons? I mean, the reality, this is Matt Pisco asks, like those picks, like you're like, you traded your 4th round pick in 2021. That pick's not going to help you for like 6 years. Like, you know, the Leafs are lacking depth right now because of bad 4th round picks they made 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, and they need some of these picks like that they've made in more recent years and some of the, and maybe the earlier Dubas drafts to like start hitting. They just do, right? Like you can't, at some point, somebody's got to start coming through and like, you got to be able to look at the Marlies and say, that guy's going to be an NHL.
Who's it gonna
that guy's
going to
be an NHL. That's a question. I don't know. I mean, it, like, I mean, 2017 looks like they may get nothing.
I Like It Rough asks, give us some good news, James. Anything will do. All right. This is what's good news for me and my family is I have a lot of extra time now at night that I did not have on all the nights the Leafs were playing. My son, who's in kindergarten, I was asking him before every game who was going to win, and he started picking Montreal every single time because he realized if the Leafs weren't playing anymore that all of a sudden daddy would be around. So, you know, for everyone, I know it's been a hard year for everybody, like we said already in the show, and like try and like enjoy, you know, maybe watch some of the other games if you feel like it, but if not, like find some things to do with your time at night. I mean, maybe like Jonas said, you will be able to go to patio soon and we'll be able to see family more, and the weather's getting good. Although I saw it's going to be like 35 degrees or something later this week. So,
woo!
Or feel like 35 degrees. But yeah, you know, the summers for Jonas and I are really kind of where we get our souls back a little bit because we're not, it's a lot, you know, working till 1 or 2 in the morning every second night for months on end. And that's what I would say to people is try and enjoy your nights and find some things that you enjoy doing. And, you know, take your significant other out for a glass of wine on the back porch or whatever. And, you know,
order some takeout.
Those are the good things in life, right? So, you know, we live in Canada. We're only going to get 3 months of good weather. Let's enjoy them.
All right, James, I think we got time for one more question.
Oh my goodness. Jonas, there are literally like 150 today.
Wow. Maybe we should come back at some point.
Well, we could always
soon and just do an all pod bag episode.
Yeah, we can do another. I can look through these more later and we can answer some of these. Dynasty says, I usually know what I want them to change after the season. I wanted Babcock gone. I didn't like the right side of the defense for many years. I have no idea where they should go from here. I mean, I don't know that the organization knows where they want to go from here. Like
how could they?
They were not,
it just happened.
Yeah, they were not thinking this was going to happen. Like they were not contemplating what the step was. So, you know, it's Jonas and I are kind of guessing what's coming next because they didn't know and they're not telling us and they're not talking about it. So it's going to be a very, I know maybe fans aren't interested. It's going to be for us like to analyze this. It's going to be fascinating what they do here and how they try and change this.
Yeah. How deep do the cuts go?
Matt Pratt says, does the playoff officiating standard affect teams like the Leafs more than teams like the Bruins? Yeah.
More? Come on, James.
What? You don't think it affects teams like the Leafs more than the Bruins?
Why would it be more than the Bruins?
Because the Bruins are better at playing in an environment where there's few penalties called. Their system.
What does that mean?
Their system and their players are better at fighting through the kind of checking, no holds barred games that the playoffs become. The Leafs are not very good in that environment.
Yeah, I can't dispute that.
I'm glad I was able to explain that and win you over.
All right, we gotta get out of here, James. Well, I believe we'll be back again later this week to look into some of what management, Kyle Dubas, Brendan Shanahan, Sheldon Keefe, the players, what they say in their end of season availability. So stay tuned to that. We appreciate everyone listening. We hope you're staying safe. And if you haven't signed up to The Athletic, give it a try. TheAthletic.com/LeafReport. James, any parting thoughts?
No, just thanks to everyone for listening and supporting the show. It was a record year for us. We hope we can get back to where we can do live shows again at some point, because those were always a lot of fun. And you know, everyone that's subscribed, I know, stick with us, because you know, if the team, you know, continues to struggle and make mistakes, we're going to do our best to kind of, as I said, be a little bit more skeptical and hold them to account. So, and you know, you folks subscribing help keep an independent outlet like The Athletic successful and vibrant the way that it is. So thank you for that.
Well said, James. We will talk later this week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.